Welcome to the Freshman 15, a film discussion podcast where we focus on the freshman works of 15 notable directors.
Here's what we do. Each episode, we talk about a different freshman film, what's good, what's bad, what themes and stylistics the director went on to use in later films, and what he kicked to the curb.
Also, we'll give you our opinion on whether the film still stands up, if it ever did, or if it's for completists only.
I'm Daniel Long. I once made a film about characters who dressed up in animal costumes and kidnapped someone's girlfriend.
And I'm Jeremy Bear, and you can't tell, but right now I'm completely naked except for flower petals that are covering my nipples and pubis.
And I'm looking closer.
Are you ready to go?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Remember those posters that said, "Today is the first day of the rest of your life"? Well, that's true of every day except one. The day you died.
I've looked under chairs. I've looked under tables.
Daniel, I wonder if you would do me a favor and humor me.
Okay.
Because I'm going to read a list of films to you, okay?
Okay.
Okay. The Matrix. Fight Club. Eyes Wide Shut. The Green Mile. The Sixth Sense, Magnolia, Three Kings, Any Given Sunday, Bringing Out the Dead, Boys Don't Cry, Man on the Moon, Arlington Road, Election, Galaxy Quest, Office Space, The South Park Movie, Toy Story 2, by the way, here's a few freshman films, The Blair Witch Project, The Iron Giant, The Virgin Suicides, Being John Malkovich.
Great films.
Great films. Thank you. Do you?
I know what they have in common.
You do? That's what was going to be my question. Do you know what these films have in common?
They all came out in the same year, 1999.
You are correct.
Yes.
Here's a guy who knows his films. Do you know which of these films that I just named won the Academy Award for Best Picture?
None.
Right again, Daniel. All of these phenomenal films were...
I can't believe you're starting off and you're getting me mad. You're angering me. Already.
They were all bested by the film that we're going to be talking about today. That's right. Today's episode of the Freshman 15, episode 4, we're going to be talking about the Sam Mendes classic,
American Beauty.
You can't tell it's right now on the podcast, but right now, Daniel, he's standing up and he's walking around the room and he's shaking his head. Come on, sit down. Sit down.
I can't.
We're fine. We're fine. We're gonna get through the whole thing, and you're gonna love it.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't believe that's wow.
I know when
right
you hear it all
outside,
together like that,
it's
you know?
Hard. It's hard.
It's
hard
tough.
Hard to hear all those things.
I want to say something in advance of this podcast, of the meat of this podcast. I look back on many years of watching films that I enjoyed, and you can't help it. You kind of rank things, you know? You rank different years. And this is just my opinion. I think you and I have talked about this in the past. 1999, for me, is the golden age. This was the year of cinema.
Gosh.
That it was just the experimentation, the art. You had people trying things. I mean, one of the movies that I named there, The Blair Witch Project. Well, it's a cliche now, but in 1999, no one had done a found footage film before. It was phenomenal.
I think this was a year that if I didn't love films already, this was the year that I started loving films.
Yeah. Stanley Kubrick's final movie, which, no, it was not his best movie, but, you know, The Matrix, the Fight Club, for heaven's sakes, Fight Club.
I can't, we're going to talk about this. I know we're going to get here, but so many of these films in 1999... do what American Beauty is attempting to do in a much better way.
Okay. All right. So let's get into it. So 1999, American Beauty, winner of the Academy Award for Best Picture, and very, very rare that a freshman film wins such high honors.
Best Picture.
Best Picture, Best Director. Really, I mean, it was a...
Best Screenplay.
Best Screenplay, Alan Ball, you're right. The summary / premise of American Beauty, how would you sum it up?
I'd say this, that the American Beauty is about a suburban family and really told from the point of view of its primary character, the father, the husband, Kevin Spacey's character, Lester Burnham, his journey toward some sort of enlightenment, which really comes by way of his daughter's friend, played by Mena Suvari. Her name's Angela. he sees this woman or this girl, sorry, this teenage girl, and all of a sudden he wants to change his life. And the film is really about, I mean, it takes some twists and turns in terms of other characters, but it's really about his coming to terms with his life and wanting a different life and taking ownership to make it different.
And you're right. While Kevin Spacey is probably the character we focus more on than maybe the others, every character, every major character in it seems to be suffering some sort of life crisis. And in every case, it seems to have something to do with some sort of sexual frustration. Maybe I'm reading too much in, but that's how I read it.
No, I think that's true. Every character, yeah, is sexually frustrated in some way.
And they're looking for some alternative way to what they've tried in the past to relieve that pressure in some way.
I think the film is really wanting, it's about wanting to attain this higher consciousness by way of being an asshole.
Well, and you know what, though? I mean, I think you're onto something, honestly, because, you know, the campaign from the film, it was this whole idea of, I think it even said, look closer. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, totally.
With the, because it's not as pretty as you think, and that's fine. I think, I don't know, for me, and I'm biased, there's a level of triteness to that.
Oh, about that theme?
Yeah, look closer, because things are a little weirder than you might think.
Absolutely. Yeah, on the outside, no one is as they seem to be.
Yeah. And this is a revelation.
Absolutely. I think if there's anyone who does that the best, and in a more weird, bizarre way, it'd be David Lynch.
Yeah, but he actually delivers on the promise.
That's the thing. He delivers on it. Yep, he delivers on it.
Before we get into our standard line of questioning, you've got something you want to get off your chest. I can tell by looking at you.
I don't know if I don't know. I don't know what I have to get off my chest except for this weight that you put on me at the beginning.
You want to just get into our normal course and it'll all just come out?
Yes, we have to. We have to do that.
So, so first of all, this was, as I mentioned before, a director named Sam Mendes. Am I saying that right?
I've always said Sam Mendes.
Mendes, okay.
But I could default to you. I'll say Mendes.
You know what? You're probably right. You've got the Hispanic blood.
It feels right. Yeah. All right. Because a lot of Spanish blood we're really familiar with, I think, the English.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is, of course, his freshman film. And he's gone on to have a pretty storied career, even in the last, I guess it's 16, 17 years. We'll start off with a question that I'm not sure how to answer, which is, what makes American Beauty a Sam Mendes film?
I don't know. I think that the film looks beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of Sam Mendes' films look beautiful. There's a sense in which the cinematography and no matter what he's trying to do, it looks good. Jarhead looks beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Revolutionary Road looks beautiful. Skyfall. I actually haven't seen Spectre, so I don't know anything about that.
No. Away we go. Beautiful.
Oh, absolutely beautiful. Yeah. So I think that there's a sense in which there's beauty. Oh, dear.
Go ahead. Oh.
There's a sense of beauty in his films,
yeah.
And there's also a sense in which he maybe is looking at the male figures. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of
male figure.
I'm sorry. There's a.
I just don't know where you're going.
I don't mean the male figure. I mean there are a lot of male characters, and he's looking at like the.
Okay, I got it. No, it's fine. I mean, you know, hey, look, we all admire the male figure. I don't know.
I mean, if you think about Daniel Craig in Skyfall, there's a certain level of, you know, looking at the male figure. But what I'm talking about is the character of the male and really kind of maybe exposing or attempting to expose this male in suburbia or at least under pressure. And who they are, or who they're going to be. I mean, I feel like there's that sense in some of his films, maybe not.
Oh, no, I think that's an interesting point. He's interested in the interior life of a man's interior life, I guess. I don't know how else you would put it. No, that's good. But you know what? The first thing that you said, I think is accurate in that when I think of Sam Mendes, I think of here is a visual stylist. I think that's true in every case. Like you, the only one of his movies I've not caught was is Spectre. I've heard mixed reactions to that one. Every single one of his films you can look at, and American Beauty is no exception. You can remember some outrageously gorgeous compositions and colors and not just beautiful, but just there's just an appropriateness. There's a rightness to it. And he does that really well.
Yeah. And he takes visual risks, I think. He does things in his films that I don't remember seeing. That's even the case in American Beauty. When I first saw it, I remember thinking like, oh, I've never seen that before. And I'm not sure if it's supposed to mean something more or if it's just kind of a pretentious move. But there were certain levels. I'm like, wow, for a freshman filmmaker, he takes some pretty incredible risks.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I remember Road to Perdition when that came out. I went into Road to Perdition because you have to. You can't help it. You go into movies with a certain attitude, with certain expectations. And I feel like I kind of had my shields up a little bit. But I definitely wanted to see it because I was really enamored of the source material. I don't know if you've ever read Road to Perdition. It's based on a graphic novel by Max Allen Collins and illustrated by Richard Pierce Rayner. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful book. While he didn't lift the material directly from the book in a page-for-page faithfulness sense, he was still able to catch what that book evoked visually and spiritually almost, I suppose. And I really came around to respecting what Mendes was doing through that film and through subsequent films, Jarhead, Away We Go. I mean, these are real accomplishments.
Yeah, these are good. Those are good films. But we're not talking about those ones.
We're not talking about those. We're talking about the freshman film, American Beauty.
The Oscar goes to American Beauty.
So I first saw this film, not right when it came out, but right after the Oscars. So that was one of the reasons why I saw it, as well as the fact that it was this person's first film. So I was getting into film. I really liked the idea of movies, you know, fiddling with the idea of what would it be like to make one. All of a sudden you hear about this person whose freshman film just won the Academy Awards and more than one. I'm like, well, I have to see this. And I remember watching it. I remember being enamored by it. There was a certain level of appreciation for it. I think because of the things I said, it's beautiful. There are certain risks that he takes. There are certain things I hadn't seen before. Certain elements of getting into Lester Burnham. So Lester Burnham, played by Kevin Spacey, he's the father of the suburban family. And so Lester's character and his fantasies and I think the liberties that Sam Mendes does to kind of get in his mind, I'm like, wow, those are incredible risks. I'm thinking of scenes like when Lester is seeing Mena Suvari's character, Angela, for the first time, right? She's dancing as a cheerleader, and you see the dance, and then all of a sudden the lights turn down. There are two spotlights, one on Mena Suvari's character, one on Kevin Spacey's character, and you see it's as if it's just them. And I remember thinking, wow, it's totally crazy. That's an incredible move. I remember thinking about those moments when, and again, this is now watching it, things that maybe frustrate me because I don't know why they're there, are the multiple shots of the same thing. So maybe the hand going toward Kevin Spacey's body, or, you know, when he's trying to seduce her, you see multiple times him doing the same thing.
Right.
And
the sort of record skip jump cut sort of technique.
Absolutely. Yeah. And thinking like, whoa, you can do that. I remember thinking that, oh, interesting. You can do this with this type of film telling this type of story. So those were things that I remember striking me then. And then watching it for this film, I have to say, those are things that still stick out. I think that those moves are interesting moves. Whether or not they should be there, whether or not they actually make sense, I think is a different question.
Right.
But the fact that he chose to do that, to leave them there, and it being his first film, I think that takes courage.
When you first saw the movie, your first take on the movie in general, you saw it in I guess it probably would have been early 2000 then. You walked away with a positive impression of it.
I did.
Good.
And yours. You're going somewhere.
No. I mean, I'm glad to hear it. So like you, I heard it had not reached the Oscars yet, but it was clearly one of those films that, you know, it was all the talk. You could tell that if it wasn't going to do the big Oscar sweep, it was certainly going to come close because it was the movie everyone was talking
right
about going in. And I'm not lying when I say that 1999 was a year where it was a revelatory year film-wise. And I thought, to beat out all these films, my goodness. I thought, well, I've clearly got to see this movie. So I go into the theater. I sit and watch American Beauty. And I'm like, all right, do it to me. Come on, let's have it.
You're waiting. They've really set you up for it.
Yeah, really. Yeah. I mean, sincerely, it was supposed to be. And by the way, DreamWorks was still a fairly young, studio. And, I was like, they're going to take a chance with this film. I get through the film and I see everyone getting up and they're just shaking their heads like, man, it was all I thought and more. And I sat there thinking, I don't get it. What did I just watch?
So everyone's excited about this.
Everyone seemed to just be completely in love with it and just walking out and patting themselves on the back for making such a great ticket purchase. And I said, what did I just watch? I hated it. So I went home and I thought about it. It's got to be me. No, it can't be me. It's got to be me.
Right.
The next weekend, my then fiance happened to be in town, my now wife, and she said, I want to see American Beauty. I said, all right, let's do it. Because I'm like, I didn't see what it was. The second viewing, I'm going to see it. We watched the movie. Well, it was partly ruined by the fact that we were sitting in front of people that wouldn't shut up. And, it was just kind of a weird experience. But I hated it even more. I didn't get it.
So the second time.
It was worse.
The nail in the coffin.
I couldn't understand it. Like, the plastic bag and all that. You know what it felt like? It felt like the whole world had decided for a period of a few months that we were all 14,
Right.
With teen angst and narcissism.
Everyone decided to like it.
Everyone just kind of collectively decided to like it. And I just didn't understand it. Well, I was furious. I was furious that it won all these awards. I was furious that it felt like my blessed 1999 movie year had gotten peed on.
Right.
And I, up until this podcast, I didn't watch it again because I was too mad at the movie. I kind of liked it the first time. I didn't. I hated it from the beginning.
So I've watched it multiple times, and I've liked it less every time.
Yours goes down.
Yes.
Here's what I want to do is typically, and by the way, we don't have to if you don't want to do it this way, but I typically, so far, we've talked about Blood Simple, Spinal Tap, Duel. We've spent time talking about what's powerful about these movies, what we like about them, and then eventually we get around to, okay, what didn't work so well. I have a feeling that the what didn't work so well, it might be might take up more time than our typical podcast. But let's get this out of the way. What is good and entertaining and powerful or beautiful or, what's positive about American Beauty?
So I've already mentioned the cinematography, which I think is beautiful. I think that the colors are phenomenal. I think that there's an oversaturation of color, and I think it actually delivers on what it's supposed to do as opposed to maybe the oversaturation of characters and other types of things in the films that's kind of on the nose. I also think, so my two favorite characters, and not because of who they are. So I think that Kevin Spacey's performance, I actually really like Kevin Spacey's performance.
Okay.
And I also really like the character of Angela.
So Angela.
Mana Suvari's
character. Yeah.
And I think that those two, and I think her character for me is the one, when I watched it this time around, I thought she's the only character who gives me something in terms of who she actually is.
Yeah.
I think she's sexually frustrated. I think there's that problem. But I think there's a level of vulnerability. There's a level about who she is that I get to know that I actually don't get to know about anyone else in the film.
It's funny that you say that, and I think you're right. I think I would go so far as to say sexually deluded, maybe.
Oh, good point, yeah.
But I also found her, and it wasn't until this recent viewing of it, she's a more interesting character than Janie.
Oh, absolutely.
I think in a lot of ways, really. Sure, she's shallow. I mean, and in fact, she's there to be shallow. And I don't think that Alan Ball wrote the Angela character to reveal anything significant to us except for through other characters. But I don't know, to me, I look at her and I go, well, not so fast, because she's doing something that, yeah, I guess, I don't know how else to put it, I find more intriguing than the daughter, than Janie.
Here's what I love about Angela's character is what happens is she thinks she's better than everyone else in the whole film. Toward the end, that whole mask is taken off and she's totally exposed. I mean, in more ways than one, right?
Literally.
But the thing about it is every other character is as if they are better than everyone. And it's almost as if the film props them up to be better than everyone. But she isn't. I mean, she thinks that way, but then she's totally unmasked. And you feel that, wow, she just came to terms with who she might be at that point. She's owning it. And she's sad. And she realizes that her life is not going to be anything worthwhile.
Jean, you'd be out of your mind to go with him.
Why do you even care?
Because you're my friend.
She's not your friend. She's someone you use to feel better about yourself.
Go fuck yourself, psycho!
Hey, shut up, bitch!
Jane, he's a freak!
Well, then so am I!
We'll always be freaks and we'll never be like other people! And you'll never be a freak because you're just too perfect!
Yeah, well, at least I'm not ugly.
Yes, you are. And you're boring. And you're totally ordinary. And you know it.
You two deserve each other.
There is something that's sort of compelling about watching someone who's completely undone by being called ordinary.
Absolutely.
Okay, and there's a part of that that I feel like more than Kevin Spacey and more than, you know, more than the kid with the video camera, more than any of these people that I can relate to, you know, in just that, at least in just that aspect.
Because who wants to be that, right?
Yeah.
Especially in school at that point, you don't want to be ordinary. You're trying to figure out who you are, how you're different than everyone else. And you think you do have this delusion that you actually are in some way different than everyone else. And if you could just find out how you are,
yeah,
then it would make everything better.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I call it the special virus, you know? And it is, it can be. It's this idea, it's this brain worm that we have as a society, particularly in our culture, where you can't, there's nothing more valuable than your specialness. And there is a valuable side to that idea,
right?
But that idea by itself is toxic. And I think, unfortunately, our culture hasn't fully recognized that yet.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things watching it this time around, I'm like, oh, wow, I think the film is guilty of Angela's fear. I think the film itself is afraid of being too ordinary, and actually it becomes worse off as a result of maybe that insecurity.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you brought up, because I was actually going to bring up a similar point about the Mina Suvari character, because, and honestly, she gives a great performance.
She does.
I didn't expect that. I didn't see it when I first saw the film, but seeing it recently, I thought, wow, she's actually doing something, and that's kind of cool. That's not to say that Thora Birch didn't do a serviceable job and all that kind of stuff. I think that what she was given to do maybe wasn't quite as interesting. But for me, there were things. Now I'm gonna blow your mind
okay,
a little
can't
bit.
Wait.
This is true, because this is something I didn't expect. I watched it again recently, and I found that I did not hate it.
Really?
The film? No,
okay.
I didn't. Now, I'm not going to go so far as to say I liked it.
Right.
And in fact, I'm not even going to go so far as to say it was a wash. I can't go that far in that direction. But I didn't have this sort of visceral hatred that I had for it before. Well, the stuff that I'm remembering hating the most, I still hate. That hasn't changed. But I discovered that there were some really great moments that I had completely forgotten about. It's, if I had to characterize American Beauty, if I had to sum it up, I would say it's a bad movie with some wonderful moments.
Okay, I like that. So you'll give it credit for those moments.
Yeah, yeah. I think there is a boldness to certain moments. The past the asparagus scene in and of itself is a fantastic scene in my opinion.
At the table.
Your father and I were just discussing his day at work. Why don't you tell our daughter about it, honey?
Janie, today I quit my job. And then I told my boss to go fuck himself, and then I blackmailed him for almost $60,000. Pass the asparagus.
Your father seems to think this kind of behavior is something to be proud of.
And your mother seems to prefer that I go through life like a fucking prisoner while she keeps my dick in a mason jar under the sink.
How dare you speak to me that way in front of her? And I marvel that you can be so contemptuous of me on the same day that you lose your job.
Lose it? I didn't lose it. It's not like, whoops, where'd my job go? I quit. Someone pass the asparagus.
Oh, and I want to thank you for putting me under the added pressure of being the sole sole breadwinner now.
I already have a job.
No, no, don't give a second thought as to who's going to pay the mortgage. Your husband feels he can just quit his job and you don't...
Will someone please pass me the fucking asparagus?
I'm not going to be a part of this.
Shut up!
He takes the asparagus and he smashes it against the wall, which I found out later was an improv move.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it's as a scene into itself, it's a really great scene. If you just watch it as its own sort of piece separate from the rest, it's very enjoyable. Now, here's the other thing. The jewel, in my opinion, of this movie is far and away Annette Bening.
Really? So now, this is most recent time around.
This most recent time around. Now, you know, again, I think she took a part. It was asking something different of her than she actually gave. She gave way more than that part was asking for. And she was nominated for the Academy Award for it. Now, she was up against Hilary Swank playing a transgender kid and all that. And it was a great performance. And I can see why she didn't win. But had she won, that would have been a well-deserved award because she really, really hits the notes that she needs to hit. And I don't like everything that Alan Ball and Sam Mendes have her doing, but she does it all so well. And she does this, she walks this line between the stylized performance and the naturalistic performance just perfectly. And honestly, I left the movie recently with my recent viewing thinking, I want to see more Annette Bening performances because she was so good.
So here's a question then with regard to that. I thought her character, it plays like a caricature in some way. I think maybe intentionally, and she does that. Now, do you think, and so therefore, as a result, given the other characters not playing so high on that level, I think she comes across as a little bit overdone.
Yeah.
Do you think if the other characters would have risen to that level and maybe played more of a caricature of themselves, that would have done something different for the film?
So this is going to get a little bit into what my problems with the movie are, because you just can't really divorce it. I am going to disagree with you. Okay. On your feelings on Kevin Spacey's performance. For me, his performance was maybe the biggest downfall of the movie.
Really?
You
hated it?
I hated his performance. I thought it was awful.
See, I hate his character, but I don't think I hate his performance. And I'm not saying that you are connecting the two.
I know what you're saying. No, but I think what I hated, he doesn't quite discover for himself how he wants to play the role. I think when we start the film, we're in this, you know, this big helicopter shot over the city, and we hear Kevin Spacey.
This is my neighborhood. This is my street. This is my life. I'm 42 years old. In less than a year, I'll be dead.
And it's a very sort of stylized thing. And early in the movie, we even see him in his office, and he's giving a very stylized performance. For you, Brad, I've got five and the whole thing. And that's how he seems to be playing it. Well, I'm getting myself in the mode and in the mood for a certain kind of movie, because this is not, it's the opposite of a naturalized performance. And I'm like, okay. And then I get it. And then we start seeing other actors, and everyone's at a different level of naturalism.
Right.
And there seems to be no cohesion. And then all of a sudden we see Kevin Spacey, and he's out with Ricky Fitz, and they're getting high and, you know, and all this kind of stuff.
What are you doing?
Honey, this is Ricky Fitz. This is Ricky Fitz.
I'm Ricky Fitz. I just moved in the house next to you. I go to school with your daughter.
With Jane?
Yeah.
Really?
Jane.
Hi. I'm ready to go. I'll meet you out front.
Oh, I'm in trouble. Nice meeting you, Ricky Fitz. Thanks for the thing.
And he's giving a uber naturalistic performance. And I guess you could look at that and say, oh, well, that's because his veneer is breaking down and all that. But I'm not personally getting that out of it. I'm getting a Kevin Spacey doesn't quite know whether he's playing the role or he's making fun of the role that he's playing. That's what I get out of it.
No, that's interesting.
I don't know.
And I think that, and I agree with a lot of the things that you're saying, but I think that about the film itself is I don't know if the film knows what type of movie it's trying to be. And so I think as the movie is going on, you get this sense that there is this highly stylized thing going on with the characters and the actors and the story itself. And then all of a sudden, you're actually supposed to be rooting for this guy.
Yeah.
And I think that that's not so much a problem with Kevin Spacey as it is with the source material, with the writing, with the story itself.
Yeah.
That this character is written in such a way that it's already a bummer. I mean, it's going in a bad direction.
Yeah, well, weirdly, as much as I did not like Kevin Spacey's performance, and this is probably just something that we just maybe have opposite feelings on. I didn't hate Lester Burnham, though. I mean, I wanted to, and I deeply hated him when I was, a guy in my early mid-20s first seeing the movie. I thought, you got to be kidding me. I mean, you know what? He's a guy in his early 40s, and you know, he's lusting after this teenage girl, and it just, I was disgusted by the fact that when she actually presented herself to him, he didn't even hesitate, and he was just ready to dive right in. I mean, the whole thing just seemed gross.
Absolutely.
It was just a gross thing. I'm 40 now. I look at that. I have a little more forgiveness for Kevin Spacey. Now, you know what? I don't know what is. How honest do I get about?
I mean, not for Kevin Spacey, for Lester Burnham.
For Lester Burnham. You're right. Good catch. So I was talking to my wife because we watched it together recently. So here's the discussion. So this is true. This is a discussion my wife and I had during American Beauty. So it's in the scene. It's the moment of truth scene between Angela and Lester
on the couch.
And he's removing her clothing and the whole thing, and she reveals the thing. Well, you know, it's my first time and all this kind of stuff, and he's, you know, they have a change of heart. Well, as things are sort of building, I paused the movie because I was thirsty. I went up, I got a drink of water. I leave my wife on the couch and I come back in and we sit down and I unpause it. And my wife, bless her, says, yeah, I know why you're getting up. I'm like, what?
What?
What? Yeah. Yeah. She's like, yeah, I get it. I know what's going on. She's like, you're trying to cool down. Yes. And I said, I really promise that that's not the case. She's like, yeah, okay.
So why did you turn the shower on for water?
Right. Yeah. And she's like, okay. And legitimately, I wasn't having some sort of, you know. And I said, no. But I said, but is it so weird for Kevin Spacey to want to fuck Mina Suvari? Is that so odd? And she was like, all right, just forget it. Forget the whole thing.
Wow, she let you off the hook.
She let me off the hook.
And then you tuck yourself.
She's the best wife there is. I'll just say that. But there was a side of that though, that I can forgive Lester Burnham to a degree because I am 40, and I do understand that you're not immune from the wiles of young ladies or something just because your age starts with a 4. And I didn't understand that when I was 22, 23.
You thought that there would, you'd be different.
Yeah, just the world makes you into a more mature. And if you're still hanging on to these gross adolescent fantasies, then that's just because you're a weak individual. And I don't believe that anymore. It's just, you know what? The world is presenting situations, terrible temptations, endless opportunities to be an asshole. And it doesn't stop just because you're in your middle age or something like that. It's just that it's less socially acceptable. And I have to concede that, yeah, that is one of the messages of American Beauty, and I totally get it. But I understand that a little more now, you know?
Wow, it made me hate him so much more this time around.
I can imagine.
And especially, why can you...
I can imagine because that's how I've felt for so long.
Here's the thing I can't stand about that moment is when she tells him, you know, she's a virgin, so he's not going to go through with it. Then he becomes so paternalistic that it annoys the hell out of me.
Okay.
I'm going to cover you with a blanket and I'm going to make you a fucking sandwich.
You're right, dude. You are 100% on that one. You are 100% right about that. No, I can't. I have no recourse. You're absolutely right. That is bananas idiocy.
I cannot. I just can't. I just can't believe that.
Can we also talk about the which wasn't as cliche in 1999, but it felt like a cliche at the time. The fag-hating Marine.
Oh, absolutely.
Who, holy cow, lo and behold, it turns out he's a closeted homosexual.
Colonel Fitz.
Yeah, Colonel Fitz.
So this brings me to an incredible point that we made with Duel that I think can be the same argument for American Beauty, but in a different way. You said in our Duel episode that you love films that are so of their time.
Right.
And I think American Beauty is a film so of its time that there are many elements about that film that actually would not happen in movies right in today.
Oh, sure.
Like with regard to that.
Sure.
The fact that there, I mean, it's a white people movie, right? So many white people in there. And so, I mean, going back to that argument about the Marine, who, yes, absolutely, which I heard, Alan Ball, if there's any character he's most like, it's the Ricky Fitz character. And that he had a father, I read, that he thought was gay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He never came out with it, but he just always had this underlying assumption that I don't know if his father was a Marine or not, but
as anyway. He was a closeted gay man. He felt his father was.
Right. Hmm. And I don't think that sheds any like different or more generous light on the Colonel character, but I do think that there's a sense in which that now just rings so silly.
So is it almost like this movie was like a letter to his own dad or something?
Yeah,
or?
I wonder. I don't know. Hmm. But yeah, about the Marine who...
I know, dude. It was so like, oh, well, of course.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, I'm sorry. I have to ask, and maybe I'm way out missing something huge there. What on earth is Allison Janney doing in this movie?
Oh my gosh, what a waste.
I know. Fantastic actress. And what is she even doing?
Here's what I want you to do, Allison. I don't want you to do anything.
Yeah.
That was the direction.
Yeah. She's there so that for a period of, I want to say about 4 seconds, we can think maybe it was Allison Janney that killed Lester Burt. Oh, I guess it wasn't.
Right.
That's her whole purpose in the movie.
I mean, yeah, why is she there?
I don't know,
what's
man.
What's the deal with her?
Why is she catatonic?
Yeah, I don't know. Is it because he beat her so many times? Was it because she was on drugs? I mean, I don't know.
You know what it almost felt like? I mean, those are probably better explanations than what I thought. I thought like that she was comatose from living under the trauma of being married to a closeted homosexual or something.
Who collects Nazi China.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just don't get it.
I was so sad. The thing about, so then when I watched the movie, I didn't know, oh, this is Allison Janney. Mm. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so watching it this time, I had to think, wait, is that Allison Janney? That can't be. There's no way. Because she's not doing anything.
Yeah. CJ Craig is just sitting there like a nut.
Yeah. And then she's a very frustrating character in that movie. And she does exist maybe for that moment. Or she exists because you want to feel some sense of compassion for Ricky Fitz's character within the family unit. Mm. I don't know.
I guess so. But you want there to at least be some... Well, I did read... Maybe she factors into this. I read that... Well, first of all, that Alan Ball conceived the film as a stage play first, which, by the way, I think it would work better as a stage play.
That's one of my points, is it feels so theatrical. It feels like I'm watching theater, that a show is being put on for me.
Yeah. I mean, certainly with the experimental nature of it, it seems like something that would have been more interesting on a stage than on the screen, but whatever. That's a quibble. But the other side of it was there was an original ending that was completely, maybe it was even shot. I'm not sure, but it certainly wasn't used. And do you know what I'm talking about?
Is this the trial?
The trial. Did she, maybe she figured into, and by the way, for those who don't know what we're talking about, the original conception for the movie included a murder trial for Lester Burnham, in which I want to say Janie and Ricky Fitz, his daughter and his daughter's boyfriend, were convicted of murdering him because they had a videotape that they had made of themselves talking about, you know, wishing him dead or that maybe they would murder him or something like that. Of course they didn't, but that ended up putting them away. Good choice in not including all that, because that really would have...
It would have made it another different movie. I mean, it would...
Yeah. It just wouldn't have worked at all. But does Allison Janney figure into that storyline? I have no idea.
Yeah,
honestly.
I don't know why she's there. It's such a waste, I think. So here's my question with regard to the story and its trajectory. Is there anything about this family that you actually buy into?
There's moments that I buy. There's no overall trajectories that I feel like I can fully get on board with. There's things, like I said, there's moments that I like. I like the moment where we see Annette Bening, I'm going to sell this house.
Right. That's a good scene. Yeah, it's a great scene.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that rings true for me, that this house is a symbol of her success and or failure and she lives or dies based on this thing, this rotted out thing that no one seems to like that she's trying to fix up. Symbolically, I like that. I get that. Where it turns into her going off and plowing the real estate king, then it starts getting into eye roll territory. Right. And, you know, again, I like the idea of a kid who's obsessed with filming things. But again, they take it to a level that I just don't care anymore. I mean, does anyone buy this bullshit about the plastic bag? I mean, really, I sat there and I watched that. And I know that even later movies have even parodied that. Right. Like, you know, isn't this a hilarious, stupid thing? But it's not. It's so sad and dumb, you know?
So dumb.
Yeah.
And I think that that's one of the things about the film is that it forces you to... It forces you to look closer, and it just, you're not looking close enough.
Yeah, you just need to look closer. Okay, this is another thing that made me bananas. I read online somewhere that the casting director was looking for Ricky Fitz. What's the kid's name who got it?
Wes Bentley.
So she had Wes Bentley in to read, and supposedly the casting director said that she never quite understood the meaning behind that scene in that plastic bag until she heard Wes Bentley read those lines.
No, that didn't happen.
It's on like IMDb or something. And I was like, well, maybe Wes Bentley can come to my house and explain it to me, because it seems like a freaking preteen trying
absolutely.
And this is another thing. Best looking kid I've ever seen in my life, by the way.
Good looking kid. Yeah, good looking kid.
This kid is really, God really put it together when
great.
He...
Great, I mean... Very just good face, nice hair.
Those eyes, the piercing eyes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for some reason, just, you know, he's just got this lonely poet soul, and only Thora Birch can really see. All right. Yeah. By the way, I was a weird kid when I was 16, 17. I would do stupid crap, like run around and write bad poetry and draw pictures of girls that I liked and all that. No one was seeing the poetry in my soul.
Why?
I think it's because I was an idiot.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I see this kid who was acting like the idiot I was, and I call bullshit on that whole thing.
Well, maybe your heart just didn't grow or fill with so much beauty.
That I just couldn't take it?
That you couldn't take it. And you felt like there's this sense of a benevolent being behind things. Mm-hmm. If you had all those things.
Yeah.
Then maybe.
Maybe.
Just maybe. Or if you had a sexually repressed father.
Yeah.
Who was a Marine, maybe.
Yeah.
So one question is, and you were frustrated about this when you first saw it, is why did this film speak to people? What about it actually spoke to people in such a way that it was only cost $13 to $14 million to make and it made over $300 million?
To me, that's one of the key questions, and I've really, it's interesting that you asked, because I really did try and understand what it was. I feel like there is something at the end of the 20th century that we were sort of flushing out of our system in a way. The year before, there was a movie that came out called Pleasantville.
Right.
You remember that one?
I do.
Gary Ross film. It was similar in that, like, you know, we're going to strip back the veneer of this Leave It to Beaver culture and, you know, that kind of thing. And I feel like American Beauty is doing that same thing. I'm having trouble thinking of them, but I feel like at the end of the 20th century, this was a theme that was resonating with people for some reason. Like, the baby boomers were remembering this plastic perfection of their own youth.
Right.
And going, well... No, hang on. And it wasn't necessarily the baby boomers that had become hippies or anything like that. I think it was people that was maybe more like my own parents that weren't necessarily into like drugs and free love and all that kind of stuff. But they just said, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll just raise a family. And they did. And it wasn't all that it was supposed to be. Now, maybe that's a loaded baked potato when talking about American Beauty, I don't know, but I think for some reason that was in the zeitgeist, this whole, we have to blow apart Leave It to Beaver. We've got to stick a dynamite in the cleaver's mouths and just blow them away. It's not enough to just say, no, we're not those people anymore. We've got to beat them up and leave them bloody. Why was the end of the 20th century the time for that? I don't know, but I remember that time, and I feel like that's that's what was going on.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, I grew up in Lancaster, which is its own level of suburbia, and there's that sense of complacency, I guess, and characters or people in films and even in real life that I remember trying to rediscover some sense of youth or excitement. And I think that's one of the frustrating things watching it now about Lester Burnham, and why I think it's interesting that you said this is like a film about and for teenagers, is because that was the high point of his life, right?
Well, there's a card in there with my beeper number. Beep me anytime, day or night. And I only accept cash.
Well, now I know how you can afford all this equipment. You know, when I was your age, I flipped burgers all summer just to be able to buy an 8-track.
That sucks.
No, actually, it was great. All I did was party and get laid. I had my whole life ahead of me.
Like, that, and that's not ever critiqued.
No.
That is what actually happens. And that is his higher consciousness.
Yeah.
In this film, is that he regresses to that moment, and that's praised.
That's praised. Yeah, you're right. That's that's his heroic moment, is saying getting high and getting laid was when life was going the way it was supposed to go.
And that's what he does. And that's what he pursues. And one of the things about that time, or that year of filmmaking specifically, and I mentioned this earlier as well, is that there are so many movies that do elements of American Beauty so much better than American Beauty does. You have Fight Club, with the whole consumerism and the whole idea of its own family and community.
Yeah.
You have Magnolia, dealing really with love, forgiveness, big themes like that.
Family.
You have Office Space, mm-hmm. who does the whole, I'm working in a cubicle and I'm kind of just going to screw that up and do my own thing. And all of these films, I think, just because they tackle that one subject in such a great way, that it says more than American Beauty does when it's trying to say all of these things.
Yeah. I love that point. And I think it's bang on, because hearing you make it in the context of those other films, that sounds absolutely right to me. I mean, it makes me think about Fight Club, who I think you're right. I think it is. It's another one of those films that it pulls back and exposes the grossness mm-hmm. of, in that case, consumerism, but with such art and facility and cleverness. But Magnolia, that's another example. There's so much art in these films, and it gets so much more specific, I feel like, than American Beauty does. Whereas American Beauty just sort of steps back and says, yeah, you know how everything's bullshit? Well, isn't it something how it's bullshit?
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful, though, in a way.
If you just spend time recognizing it's bullshit, but recognizing the beauty of the bullshit,
right,
then you'll reach this place of beauty.
And meanwhile, Tyler Durden is telling us, you are not a beautiful butterfly. You're gross. You're nothing. You're going to be dirt someday. I don't have a good follow-up for that. That's really all I have to tell you. And I hear that, I'm like, well, now you're saying something.
Absolutely.
I don't agree with it, but you're saying something, you know. In American Beauty, I don't get that sense. I feel like you're talking. You're not saying something, you know.
And I just don't buy it. I don't buy when he gets shot, and then at the end of the film, he kind of looks back on these moments when he's lying in the grass, or his grandmother's hands, and Janie, and Carolyn, and all of a sudden, you know, because he decided not to screw this underage girl, he's having this moment of reflection, and you know what? We're all going to get there someday.
Yeah.
I guess I could be pretty pissed off about what happened to me, but it's hard to stay mad when there's so much beauty in the world. Sometimes I feel like I'm seeing it all at once, and it's too much. My heart fills up like a balloon that's about to burst. You have no idea what I'm talking about, I'm sure. But don't worry. You will someday.
Maybe that's it, though. Maybe it was America. Maybe it was America and beyond having a conversation with itself in 1999 and saying, yeah, I'm sick of acting like I don't want to I don't want to have sexual relations with underage girls. I do. And I want to be able to tell people that. And that's okay. And I feel like, no, you're starting a conversation. You're not finishing one there, you know? Because it's not okay.
Right.
It's not okay.
Right. The whole wisdom in this movie, because Lester is a voice of wisdom, is be a selfish prick.
Yeah.
And at that point, you'll reach what you want to reach. And every character is like that, except for Angela.
Yeah.
Where if you're selfish enough, maybe that's one of the points, which is a sad, sad point. That if everyone really just pursued their own thing, everyone really would be happy.
Yeah.
You couldn't live together, but at least everyone would be happy.
Yeah.
And that sounds so tragic.
It is. So to pull back for a second, back to Sam Mendes, because we can dig into the weirdness of the film all day long, but I think we both mentioned that we've both seen the vast majority of his work, but we got to ask the question, where does American Beauty fit in to his overall body of work?
I think it's at the bottom.
You'd say it's the least of his films.
Of the ones I've seen, I think it is. I mean, all the other films I like more.
Yeah.
Now at this point.
Yeah.
So
I agree completely. Like I said, I don't hate it like I used to. I think there are worthwhile moments in the film. At the same time, though, it's everything he's done since then is better.
I agree.
Yeah, I can't think of an exception. I mean, you know, I would like to see Spectre, I guess, even though people seem to be kind of, they didn't like it from what I heard.
Yeah, but even, yeah, and I haven't seen it either, so like, but it does seem like I'd like it more.
At least there's an honesty to James Bond.
That right.
You know, I mean, I'm not a James Bond guy. I don't know if you are.
No.
I take it you're not. He's fine. Whatever. I'm not gonna go out of my way for a James Bond movie. But at least everyone's upfront about who James Bond is.
Right.
For heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
There's an honesty to it that I guess I don't see in American Beauty.
But I do wonder if Sam Mendes is as he's making the movie. If he has an inkling about these ideas. Like, oh, I wonder, I don't know if I buy into this.
No, it's an interesting question because he's clearly a bright guy. I mean, I think in order to make a film like American Beauty, you have to buy it. I mean, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I don't know.
I just think he does so much better what he's attempting to do with Revolutionary Road.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I think that pitting those two films up against each other is a really interesting thought exercise, at least.
Yeah, it is. And that's another one I think I would like to go back to. I haven't seen it since it came out, but I remember it being pretty powerful. I mean, I hate to blame one person for my problems with American Beauty, but most of them are probably with Alan Ball.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of talk, too, about the original script did this, and it was a little darker here, and I don't... At that point, I'm like, American Beauty as a film is such, and the story is such that I don't think you can blame it on all like changes that were made. I mean, it just doesn't seem like it couldn't be that different to be what it is.
No, I think you're right. My wife and I watched 6 Feet Under.
You did? I've only seen a few episodes.
Well, I was the same way. I got probably 5 or 6 episodes in, and I...
And same I, feel, right? It has a similar feel.
It's very, yeah, it is very similar. It's kind of like a similar take on life, and it's the sort of... I mean, honestly, I'm just going to go ahead and be harsh. It's a very self-satisfied kind of check it out. I'm about to blow your mind all over again. Kabam. You know, it's that kind of thing that it doesn't ring with me, you know?
And then he does True Blood, which people seem to love, which I've never seen.
Oh, I didn't even know that was Alan Ball. Is it really?
Yeah, I think so.
So I guess the, you know, the question that we always ask at the end, of course, and the answer is never a surprise given the discussion, but... Does the film stand up on its own?
It doesn't. However, I think you should watch it. And I think you should watch it again. And I do think that it's a question that intrigues me. And I'd like to hear you, listeners, your thoughts on why was this film such a hit when it came out? What did it say to people that people actually resonated with? Why was it important then? Which I think is a worthy question, because it obviously, yeah, had something to say.
I mean, I guess even as a piece of anthropology, it is sort of a, this is what was really resonating with people in the year 1999. And I guess I'd be curious about that too. If you're someone and you're listening to this podcast and you enjoyed American Beauty and it really struck a chord with you, I'd like to hear from you also. Tell us what it was, because maybe there's something big that Daniel and I are not plugged into.
I just think this film could not be made now, because the larger questions in life are not, how can I get back to my teenage years? How can I live the dream again? Because my sad little life with this sad little facade needs some sort of spark. Those aren't the problems of the world. There's right. So many more problems in the world that need to be addressed. So many different types of stories need to be told. I just don't think that Lester Burnham's character or that story can actually satisfy any of the questions that we're asking now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not kidding when I say, and I'm sure people that are listening to this right now are thinking, you're just so way out in left field. You have no idea what this movie's about. When I make statements like this one, it's a movie about sexual frustration. You know, I mean, okay, yeah, sexual frustration is a real thing, and it's something that people deal with. It's something we've all dealt with, I think, to a degree.
Right.
And it's just one more eye roll. Of course, the only perfect suburban couple that everything's really working out for is that gay couple.
They're the most happy in the
film. Yeah, thank goodness they figured it out. You know, it's like, oh, come on, please. Really? I mean, you know, I'm sure I'm not alone in that the gay friends that I have tend to have just as many relationship problems as anyone I've ever met, you know? Well, Daniel, I think it's safe to say that we're probably never going to be fully won over by American Beauty. Although, you know, I agree with you that maybe it is, as a study, worth watching. It's such a hard one for me to recommend to people.
I know.
You know,
it's 2 hours of people's time that you're telling, you know, take out for some study.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth looking at and asking that question, at least.
Where were we at in 1999? You know what, though? I say, watch Away We Go. Watch Jarhead. Watch
right.
Revolutionary Road. These are films that they are worth your time. And if you get through all those and you want to see American Beauty, then go check it out. But this is just not the film of the Sam Mendes oeuvre to spend time with.
I agree.
Well, that's all for this episode of The Freshman 15. I want to thank you for joining us. And again, Daniel and I, not into American Beauty. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. But you're welcome to your own opinion. And if you got a different opinion, please tell us what you think. We want to hear it.
If you want to reach us to tell us what you think of this episode of the podcast, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or you can drop us a line at freshman15film@gmail.com. That's freshman15film@gmail.com. And by the way, if you have a freshman film or director you want to hear us talk about, you know what? Let us know. And we've given you some questions, maybe a little bit of a homework tonight. So give us some responses about what you think about American Beauty. We're open to suggestions with regard to films. We're also open to suggestions as to why we don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, and we may never know. Also, before we go, we'd like to mention our friends over at Steelcraft, which is a community of shipping container restaurant eateries in Long Beach that's going to be opening imminently. It's born of a desire to see people come together over food and drinks. Steelcraft unites local eateries with a communal dining space in Long Beach. And whether you come for the food, the drinks, or the people, there's a place for you at the Steelcraft table. For more information, visit steelcraftlb.com.
Want to give a big shout out and thanks to our producer, Randy Baranowski. He's
yes.
going to be helping us out, producing some episodes, making me sound a whole lot sexier. Listen closer. Thanks again for listening. I'm Daniel Long.
And I'm Jeremy Bear. We'll talk to you next time.